size, presumably the lot that one was working on. That would have to go to a public hearing in front of the Planning Commission, which would then send it on to the Town Council. And at that point, you would then have an amended map, but you would not have permission for the new use to proceed, because you would then have to go back and issue a conditional use permit for that new use. So you would then have yet one more public hearing before the Planning Commission to do that. So the way that it works right now, you have at least one extra step in the process, really two, compared to what everyone has described to me. But really, the way your ordinance is written says it's important, which is that any significant new commercial use is done by conditional use permit. You don't do speculative zoning, and I don't think you want to do speculative commercial zoning in Boulder, which is to say that you would zone vacant land for commercial and then see what happens. There is one other angle on this, which is that there's a bit of a risk. There's a risk that has two manifestations, two ways that it could show up. The first is, let's say that the Town Council voted to amend the zoning map. There was a new commercial zoning district created for a person, particular lot, and then the person who had applied for that amendment says, oh, guess what, I'm not going to do the use I had in mind anyway, and I'm going to apply for a conditional use permit for something else, or I'm going to leave this for the time being vacant as a commercial lot that has no specific use. So there's a risk there of having a piece of land set up for commercial over which you no longer have the control that you want using a conditional use permit. That's probably a small risk, but it exists. The other reality, and one that in some ways probably is more likely, is let's say that I come in and request a zoning map amendment to commercial to do a garden center. The amendment is approved by the Planning Commission and the Council. I come in and I get a conditional use permit before the Planning Commission. And then 2 or 3 years later, the garden center fails. It's not financially viable. And I have a nice big steel building, let's say, that was the garden center someone now wants to use as an auto body shop. Okay. So you're not required specifically to let them make that use of it. They would have to come get a conditional use permit, and as near as I can tell, it's probably not possible to get a conditional use permit for an auto body shop. But what the pressure on the town at that point is going to be, well, here is this vacant commercial building, shouldn't somebody make use of it, right? And so what I see here is, and neither one of those risks is guaranteed to happen or to be a problem, but they exist, they could be a problem. It seems to me that it would require fewer steps in the process and be more in keeping with what you all keep telling me and what I read in the plan as well, to simply say that we're going to allow commercial uses upon the issuance of a conditional use permit in some combination of the zoning districts. And the commercial zoning district would not be used anymore, but I could apply for a commercial use within the GMU or one of the residential districts. And you could certainly, you're allowed to have any geography of that one you want. So you could say, well, we'll allow this to happen in the GMU and the LDR, but not in the MDR and the HDR. Or you could draw an entirely new line and say, well, within this line, regardless of the underlying zoning district, you can apply for a conditional use permit for a commercial use. So there's the possibility of having an entirely new line that might make sense in some way or other.
Lee, I'd like to add one comment in there.
Sure, go right ahead.
And that is, you pass ordinances, you do this and that, and you go along, and nobody really challenges anything, and so you feel like, well, everything's working fine, but the person builds the garden shop, using your analogy, let's say they spend a substantial amount of money on infrastructure there, the garden shop fails, it just can't make a profit, and but the auto body shop or some other undesirable use, it looks like it could make a profit, and then, but that owner then is in a position of wanting to do something that you don't want him to do, and so then he files a lawsuit, and this is where most, this is where the rubber usually meets the road, because once he says, well, what am I going to do, then he sues the town, then the town has a whole new decision process to make, so, well, this guy bucks up, and he can spend $200,000 trying to pursue this all the way to the Court of Appeals, and so on and so forth. Do we as a town want to spend that? And so I think that's a heightened risk, is what you're saying too, but a lot of times it's generated out of litigation.
Well, I think Curtis is exactly right. It could lead to litigation. I think that, you know, the first layer of the question will be political. Is the town of Boulder really going to say to a landowner, no, you can't make a reuse of this building? Are you guys really going to do that? And are you going to feel pressured as neighbors and as members of the community to permit something that you may not really be very happy about, but feel that you don't have a whole lot of choice either? The thing about a conditional use permit is that it can have an expiration date, and you know, it can be subject to automatic renewal as long as the conditions are fulfilled. A zoning district doesn't expire, it's there.
Right.
And so there's a pretty, you know, and again, I don't know how to evaluate, you know, what the risk here is. This a 10% risk? Is this a 5% risk? Is this a 50% risk? But it is a risk. And I, if it were me, and it's not me, it's you guys, you have to decide. If it were me, I would feel more comfortable saying, okay, if someone wants to put in another guest ranch, since we've been talking about guest ranches, if somebody wants to put another guest ranch in the GMU, I guess that's a permitted use as a separate thing anyway. Wouldn't have to have commercial zoning, but so switch to a different commercial use, go back to the garden center. If I want to put in a garden center somewhere in the GMU where there are really usually pretty big lots that can soak up a use like that pretty easily, then isn't it simpler and more straightforward from everyone's point of view to just have a hearing about the conditional use permit, say we either are or are not going to issue a conditional use permit here based on whether or not this proposal complies with the standards we have. And that, again, that takes us back to the standards. And if we have standards that we're confident in, then the risk is small. But I know this seems kind of abstract because we're talking about a risk that may or may not come to pass, at least in the near future. And we're talking about, you know, we're talking about the process of doing things. I'm trying to give you the simplest path I can see to get where you want to go, and one that has a little less risk than the other. But I need to hear your reactions. I think, first of all, I need to know if you understand. I think people understood pretty well the last time we talked about this. But let's go back to that question of, you know, fundamentally, do you understand what I'm saying, what I'm proposing that you consider? And then if you understand it, what's your reaction? But I think it's time for me to stop talking and hear your reactions.
Can I ask a question?
Sure.
A couple years ago, in a training session with the Utah League of Cities and Towns, the instructor, Meg Ryan, was suggesting that Boulder, I mean, this was a training session with Boulder Town, and she was suggesting that because, she said, our table of uses, almost every use was a conditional use in one zone or another. I mean, almost every use was conditional.
That's right.
And she said, why don't you just make them permitted uses in the zones you want them permitted and try to minimize your usage of conditional use simply because I'm not sure if I'm paraphrasing her correctly, but essentially there's very little that you could actually refuse in terms of a conditional use if it meets your definition, meets your standards. Your hands are pretty much tied. Pretty much you'd get in trouble with some people if you didn't allow a conditional use under that circumstance. So minimize the use of conditional uses and just make things permitted where you want them. So in a way, it sounds like that suggestion is sort of flying in the face of what you're suggesting.
I disagree with that in a place like Boulder. And let's get back to the type of community in which that advice would make sense, which would be a larger community that was anticipating, that wanted to encourage commercial or industrial development, that was willing to simply lay out along a road, usually, a block of land of one size or another that involved multiple property owners and say, okay, this is where we want commercial in our town. That is, in fact, what most communities do, right? But most communities are not 400 people with the unique landscape that Boulder has and the unique set of circumstances and uses. And everything that I read in your plan and everything that people have told me, both in informal conversations and that I heard at the workshop that we did a year and a half ago, is that you're quite picky about what commercial uses might show up, and that you would like to make sure that they meet certain standards. And so, you know, it gets back to the reality. Yeah, if they meet the standards, you have to approve it. And so that's good. Make good standards, and you won't have a problem.
Okay.
It's that straightforward. And this is about how Boulder is quite different than so many other communities.
Okay.
I kind of agree with Lee. In spite of all the advice we've gotten about conditional use permits, I think it is still the right way to go. Just because we're oddballs.
There are not very many places like Boulder. I always hesitate to use the word unique. That gets you in trouble. But there are not a lot of places like Boulder. And there are also not a lot of places, including some that are a little bit like Boulder, that have a group of citizens who spend the time and effort you guys do in trying to take care of your place. And I think that so long as the conditions that are going to be imposed on conditional use are clear, so long as it's realistic to meet them for a particular use that you consider to be desirable, so long as the process is good, then you don't have a defensibility problem.
I think one of the things that we really need to help the Planning Commission is to lay out, how the standards work and how conditional use permits have to be kind of clearly done, and everything you refer to has to be clearly mentioned in the ordinance and all, all the kind of legalities to
prevent. Right. Well, let's just go back to Thursday night. Okay. You guys made a decision about a conditional use permit, which I think was a 3-2 vote. And from my perspective, I find no fault in that decision. But here's the deal. You didn't actually adopt a single condition in making your decision. You just said, it's okay. And so now, what is the content of the conditional use permit for those two new guest ranch units that were approved?
Actually, that's not 100% correct, Lee.
Yep.
They already had a conditional use permit
with
conditions, and so the motion was to put this as an amendment to the conditional use permit, so the conditions that were originally imposed would apply to the new units.
Okay, well, and so...
Those conditions were as thorough as they could have been and incorporated all the standards, but there were conditions about property management and paying taxes, et cetera, et cetera.
Okay, so in the future, it probably would be a good idea to review those when you're making an amendment.
Okay.
I get...
I thought you did, Curtis. I thought that you did go through the conditional use permit, didn't you?
Yes, I did, and it was.
I think you missed that, Lee. Maybe
on the application.
Yeah.
Anyway,
okay, well, I know that the Curtis
I agree with Lee on one thing, and that is, I think that we should, when we're ready to make a motion to approve something important or adopt something important, we should stop and draw it out in detail and make sure that it's spelled out correctly. And I agree with Lee on that.
Yep. So, but my sense, to get back again to last Thursday night, is that the process you went through and the conversation that you had was the process that you feel comfortable with. You talked about a specific use, the landowner was there representing himself, members of the public were involved to the extent that they chose to be. I don't see that you guys are going to want to change that way of doing business. I think you just need more specific standards to apply as you do that business, and you don't have to, because you can't condition, you got to remember, you can't put conditions on a legislative act, on a map. I mean, if you change it to commercial, it's commercial. And so there you go. Whereas if you say, well, we'll allow commercial in the GMU under conditional use permit, then everyone understands from the beginning that the use you allow is that specific use subject to those specific conditions. There isn't anything speculative about it, right? And that's the risk that you take, is that if you amend the map and then I say, oh, well, gee, I wanted you to amend the map to do a garden center and now I've changed my mind, well, you've got a commercial zoning district there on the map without conditions.
You know, to take that one step further and tie it into what Pete Benson was just saying, right now under our two-step process, and I think I talked about this on the phone one day, but like Peter said in the last meeting, I believe it was, you know, spot zoning is one of those planning no-nos. But the fact is that right now, that's exactly what we have in Boulder, because step one is you're supposed to go apply for a rezone to make it commercial, and then, like you said, go through all these hoops. So what you're in effect doing is spot zoning. You know, you want to put a garden center over here in this GMU, you got to go spot zone it.
Right.
So I think that's yet another reason why what you're saying makes perfect sense.
Well, me too.
I think it's the character of Boulder.
That's
my conclusion in a nutshell, is that this is the way land use... We're not going to sit down, I don't think, as a group and say, let's draw a map and predict where commercial uses would be, right? That would just make everybody crazy.
Yeah.
And so,
yeah. You
know, what I'm trying to do is get you into the space of where you're comfortable with as little risk as possible. So then I'm going to take it, having heard no objection, that, you know, pending any other questions, that I should draft up the language to make this change. That good?
Certainly good for the zoning administrator.
Okay.
Yeah. I have a quick question. This is Haley.
Sure. Sure.
So if you, just to be clear on my end, are you essentially saying that you're going to rewrite it so that anyone can apply for a conditional use permit to do something commercial on GMU, right? I mean,
or
and,
any of the other zoning districts.
Or any of the other zoning districts. Yes. And then, so what does that mean as far as, like, you know, us approving it? Like, does that mean then that, like, if that conditional use that they're applying for meets A, B, and C, then no one can argue that that conditional use as a commercial use can't be done?
Yep.
And
if I understand what you're saying correctly, then if it meets the standards, then you are obliged to approve it, which is why we have to talk long and hard about the standards and have good
right,
standards.
Okay. Yep, okay. Okay. Yeah, just
that's where we're at, and I, you know, in essence, you would do exactly what you have been doing, right? I'm not actually suggesting a change in your logic at all. I'm trying to get it into the right legal context here.
But well, I could go on, like, a, you know, piece of land, say, down in Lower Boulder, where, mm-hmm. you know, I mean, there's not really much commercial stuff.
Right.
And put a conditional use permit in to do something commercial mm-hmm. on
now,
someone's land down there that would allow that, or you buy land and you want to do it or whatever.
Right, if you meet the standards.
If you meet the standards, right, okay.
Right.
Okay.
Which leads me to something that I forgot, but that is in the memo that you all received. I got to thinking about that meeting on Thursday and went back and read the plan. And you have a list of traffic problem areas in your plan. I think it's on page 15. And it doesn't include Lower Boulder Road. And so one suggestion I would make, no matter what else you do or do not do, based on my advice, would be to add Lower Boulder Road to that list.
Yeah.
Because it would be pretty awkward to say, well, we turned this. Suppose the vote had gone the other way. Suppose it had been 3-2 against. And the reasoning basically was that road can't accommodate any more traffic. And then the landowner says, well, I'm aggrieved by this decision. I'm going to go talk to an attorney about what we could do. And the attorney is going to read the plan and say, well, they have a list of problem areas for traffic, and that road's not on it. So how defensible is their decision? So no matter what else we change, even if we don't change anything else, I would suggest that when we write these amendments up, we add Lower Boulder Road to that list. So,
yeah.
And that would then let you use the standard that we talked about for home businesses that would probably end up being applied to all commercial uses about traffic and parking generation to say, you know, Lower Boulder Road has a very limited capacity and we cannot accommodate anything very big down there. Right? You'd have a clear basis in the standards to make that statement.
Yep.
But in this case, we need to go back and change the plan to support the standard. Easy to do, but important to do, too. Right?
And what you're saying, Lee, too, in your memo, I think, is that we have to do a study and we have to be able to back that up with, you know, with factual data showing that it is a substandard road. And that it's limited in what kind of business it can support, right?
Well, yeah. I mean, I would go ahead and amend the plan anyway, just so you could at least talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Right. That at least is your first step. And then I would say it wouldn't be very hard to sum up what the zoning allows down there that's served by Lower Boulder Road in terms of what you could still build in the way of subdivisions or what else on those parcels. It's a relatively small area. It wouldn't take very long to, you know, go through the property records and count up what's still possible within a pretty, you know, pretty good accuracy. And then to say, well, if we're going to have this much traffic, and given that road, it's not like this is a close question, you know, where I'm talking about whether, you know, a standard two-lane highway can carry 3,200 vehicles per day or 3,800 vehicles per day. This is not a good road. This is a narrow road with all sorts of impediments to its improvement. It doesn't have much capacity, and I think it would be pretty easy to come up with the facts that, that would be usable in court to say, hey, we looked at this, we figured out what could happen down there, we figured out what we might have to do, either to improve the road or to, I mean, the truth is that you can only do so much down there on a dead-end road, right? The way to have any big level of development down there, you'd need another road. And so I don't think, in this case, there wouldn't have to be a whole lot of effort expended on the study that I'm talking about to make it clear what the limitations were. But, in an ideal world, that ought to be on the list, the town's to-do list, is to say, hey, we need to be able to back up. Because everybody always says, right, nobody disagreed that Lower Boulder Road has a limitation.
Right.
We just need to document that.
So just
in this particular case, it's easy.
Just to carry it one step further, as a way to eliminate the discussion about standards, then let's take the traffic standard. And so when you're discussing that, and you're drafting that part up, we could delineate and use it as an example. Lower Boulder Road is one kind of a problem traffic standard wise, where if somebody a ranch up on Upper Boulder on Highway 12 had direct access on Highway 12 would have an easier time doing a guest ranch, say, than, you know, expanding the guest ranch any further down at the end of Lower Boulder Road. Is that
absolutely? I mean,
that's where we'd help construct our standard.
Yeah.
I mean, we need, as best we possibly can, to reflect the reality that different landowners face. Mm-hmm. And if I'm on the other end of town, I have direct access to the highway, then I can do all sorts of things that would never make sense on any of the other rural roads, including Lower Boulder Road, but even on some of the other rural roads mostly aren't all dead ends, although I think some of them are, but they don't have a big traffic capacity either. They're narrow, they're not well improved. And so you have, you know, these shades of capacity. Lower Boulder Road being a dead end is at the limited end of capacity, the highway is at the other end, and then you have things in between. And that's all pretty logical. It's not very hard to present or defend to people. You just need to do a little bit of work, and, you know, in this case, I would start with doing a build-out and analysis of what's down on Lower Boulder Road. But I wouldn't wait to change the plan until I've done the analysis. I would put that on the list, so that you could at least say, hey, wait a minute, stop, think. Lower Boulder Road is on our list in our comprehensive, our general plan of places that are a problem area.
Makes sense.
Easy to do.
It is interesting that we don't have Lower Boulder on that list. Lower Boulder Road.
I was surprised when I read it.
Well, and it's funny because all the new traffic has really only been in the last couple of years, right after we did the general plan, it seems like.
Mm-hmm.
You know? So that's, it just kind of shows how fast that changed down there.
Right.
You know? Yeah.
Well, you weren't thinking about it when you wrote the general plan, and that's understandable.
Yeah.
And now you need to make... And again, you need to make it really easy change, right? This is an easy change to make.
Yeah.
So, that's there. So, do I hear anyone with more questions about changing the way that the commercial gets done? Or are we clear that we should at least talk about this change?
Well, I know that since I've been on the Planning Commission that I've heard a lot about how we shouldn't be using conditional use permits. And it does seem like it does work for our community, and because, we're not like all other communities. And so I don't really want to see us create new zoning areas, like a commercial zoned area or industrial zone area someplace. I do like the idea of the conditional use permit, especially since it's not, as you said, basically it expires. That's one of the things that I like about it, is that it's not set in stone, like, this section of property will always be commercial, you know. Anyway, I like that idea of changing it. Or not changing it, but just continuing to do what we're doing, basically, using conditional use permits for commercial.
Well, one thing to remember is that the reason that they discourage commercial use permits is because it's having the conditions and the standards defensible in court is harder than it was, you know, before LUDMA. And so the hard part of this whole process is to make sure that the standards are there and usable, and they get used properly.
And that's what we're doing right now, right?
Right. That's exactly what we've begun on.
Yeah.
So there's some things that need to be clarified. That's for sure.
I have one other question, Lee, and that is that I remember hearing the words that conditional use goes with the land. Like, if that's true? Okay, so if
it goes with the land. It, you don't have to, if I decide if the garden center is successful and Curtis wants to buy it from me, he doesn't have to get a new conditional use permit.
Right, exactly.
He just has to comply with the conditions.
Exactly.
Clearly speaking, we don't regulate ownership.
Yep.
Right? We try very hard not to regulate ownership. We try to regulate physical realities.
Okay, so that's still... Okay. Thanks.
As a general principle, when you start regulating ownership, you're likely to get in trouble. So we regulate the physical.
Right. So they're not... they don't come with an expiration. That'd be something that the Planning Commission would have to add on.
You can add that on.
Right.
Yep. So...
Or that it's reviewed yearly or whatever.
Yeah, right. Annually renewable or something.
Yeah.
I have a question about that, Lee, that maybe you can answer. I know that, for example, they use the example of a gravel pit. And they say, okay, this is a conditional use, but then they attach a condition that it's revocable at any time. Because usually the infrastructure, you know, it's kind of a temporary thing, or it can be, you still own the land. And then if the town develops out toward the gravel pit and what was never a nuisance, now all of a sudden is a nuisance to all these people live out there, the dust and everything, so then you can revoke it. But if someone goes in and wants to build the Boulder Mountain Lodge in the middle of town and spend $2 or $3 million on infrastructure and everything, aren't those kinds of conditional use permits pretty much set in stone unless they violate the conditions?
That's right. They're set in stone unless they violate the conditions.
Right.
And the same would be true of the gravel pit. In the example that you proposed there, what we are saying is that the gravel pit would end up violating the conditions because it would become a nuisance. Now, Utah law has some protection for mining in it that would make it difficult for you to revoke that permit unless you wrote the conditions very carefully. Okay, and it's the same as Utah law has some protection for agriculture. You know, it's pretty tough to make a legitimate agricultural use a nuisance in Utah and in many other states as well. And there's good reasons for that. It protects the rural industries as people move out into the countryside and the investment that people have made in those industries. So I think it's a balancing of factors. But, you know, in terms of the Boulder Mountain Lodge or any similar use that people have a really significant investment in, then, you know, the answer to the question is that it's in their interest to comply with the conditions. And
you wouldn't issue that kind of a permit and say, but it's revocable anytime we just feel it's a nuisance.
Right. Well, you know, it's by definition, it's revocable if they fail to comply with the conditions.
Right.
Right. So that's the way you're going to word this in any case, is to say, okay, now, you know, with a potentially temporary use like a gravel pit, you could put some language in there about its duration. because we all know, you know, and about reclamation of land, for example, right, with a gravel pit. We do put in time factors on uses like that, but it would be really unusual and pretty weird, actually, to put a time factor on a lodge or some commercial use of that nature. We assume that they're going to continue, and we assume that if it becomes difficult to meet the conditions, that they can come back in and petition for an amendment of the permit. There is a legal process, right? There's due process for them if they feel they need to take it. But at some point, the town has to have the ability to enforce. And so, yeah, your conditions are enforceable. And so even if it is a major investment, like, you know, Boulder Mountain Lodge, if they are consistently violating some condition of approval, then you have the right to enjoin them until they comply.
Well, I'd like to say, all that being said, I agree with Colleen as far as I like the idea of considering each case individually of conditional use permits as opposed to zoning. That just seems like an unnecessary hurdle that you probably come up against. And I also am anxious to amend that or put an amendment on the general plan about Lower Boulder Road. I don't know how to go about doing that myself, but I just like to say I am comfortable with the way we're headed on this conditional use thing.
I will write those things up for your consideration and get them out to you, including the plan amendment, which is super easy in this case.
Okay.
One that you could separate from the rest of these questions pretty easily and just have the Planning Commission and Council do, because I can't imagine anyone actually disagreeing with that particular amendment.
Yeah.
It should be pretty straightforward.
Yeah.
Okay, so then I will get some things out to you, and we'll have another discussion of this, including the geography of it, and make sure that you really are comfortable. But I think, you know, what I've been trying to do is, like I said, to embody the process that you've been using, that you rely on anyway, and make it the most straightforward and most effective that we can. And so what I would suggest we do for the next few minutes is to, Peg, do you have that home occupation worksheet that you can put up on the screen?
Are you not seeing it right now?
All I'm seeing is my memo. But then maybe
the worksheet. Right, yes, I do have it. Hold on.
I think that you've got that, and that's the best thing to use to best thing to use for the next part of the conversation here. And this is a conversation that we'll have to continue. Okay, there we go, good. So what I want us to do is to say, okay, we have, you know, a tentative agreement. These are things we need to consider when we look at a home business. And we have a relatively straightforward, relatively simple checklist here that would be applied to home businesses, which are by definition a business where the owner, operator of the business is in residence on the property, right? Now, with other commercial uses, the next distinction we make is that other commercial businesses, the owner does not have to be present. We would also permit a larger scale of operation, perhaps some different things, and this would all be reflected in the table, which would say that, okay, home businesses are a conditional use, That's one category of conditional uses. Certain other types of commercial use are also permitted by conditional use permit. And so what standards apply to those? And the simplest way, it seems like to me, to give me a start on what I need to write up for you is to use this list that we did for home business and say, well, now, which items on there do we want to also apply to a larger scale business where the owner might not necessarily be in residence? And so you've got a list there of 9 things, and we're going to take owner in residence or occupant in residence, because there could be a rental property, so it's not the owner. We're going to take that off because that would not apply to other businesses. And then we could talk about any or all of these other potential standards and whether or not we should apply them to larger businesses. And if so, do we make them stricter? Do we make them more robust than they would have to be to regulate a home business? And I think the ones that, I mean, we have all the nuisance considerations, probably apply also to any business. Signs, you have sign regulations, so that would be applicable. Parking commercial vehicles, you're about going to have to let other businesses have larger vehicles. Operating hours, you could still have that if you wanted to as a potential condition. Parking, you already have table 3, the parking thing in your ordinance, but you also have the buffering and screening of parking areas. You have traffic generation, which would apply, for example, to someone proposing a larger business down on Lower Boulder Road. One thing that I think is pretty sensitive in Boulder, in some ways, and maybe not sensitive at all in other ways, is the level of outdoor activity in terms of outdoor sales, outdoor work. You know, what's there, and when it comes to those, we probably are going to talk about landscaping, buffering, screening. But I guess my question to you is there anything on there that you don't think applies to a larger business? Is there something that's not on here that needs to apply to a larger business? And I think the answer to that's going to be yes, but I want to hear what you're going to say. But if we just start with this list, you know, is there anything on here that you would not want to have the ability to write a condition about for a larger business?
Is the matter of ingress, egress part of traffic generation?
You know, it is in an abstract sense, but I think that it would be much better to have more specific standards when you come to larger businesses. And so I would want to add managing the access from those businesses to the list with your agreement. We don't have to worry, we don't worry about that very much on the home businesses because we limit their size and scale so much. But if you're talking about, again, and we'll get back to my garden center example, you know, there are different locations in the GMU where I could see someone proposing a use like that. You're going to want to look at how people get on or off the highway or one of the local roads. You know, is there good vision? You know, there are several standards that we would put in there in terms of the angle that the approach takes, the visibility from that approach, and so on. In Boulder, we don't have to get super carried away, but there are some standards that we'd add. So that's a good addition to what we've got here, is to be more concerned about ingress and egress than with the home business. Anything else? This is not your only chance. obviously, but I just wanted to get some direction for what I prepare for you for the next meeting. Let me ask you a question then. In the definitions in your existing ordinance, you limit the number of units that would be permitted in a motel or a hotel. I don't know if you do that with RV parks or not as well, but do we want to put something in there about the scale of uses like that?
The scale?
Yeah, 30 units. Is 30 units the magic scale? If you have a 60-unit motel, is that just too big for Boulder? But, you know, that's a scale regulation. It's when you say there can only be so many units or so many parking places. I mean, you could limit businesses by saying they can't have more than X parking places, kind of working backwards from parking to the business. There are a bunch of different ways you can talk about the scale of a business enterprise. What your existing ordinance says in the definitions about motels is very straightforward. It just says they can't have more than 30 units. And I think we had a conversation about you could have a pretty ugly 30-unit motel. But, you know, ugly or not, do we want to keep those types of scale limitations?
Let me ask you a question, Lee.
Yes.
Well, it's a conditional use permit. You have to have a conditional use permit to have the motel. It's capped at 30 units. And is that defensible if a chain motel, like La Quinta or something, comes in someday and says, we want to build a motel, but it's not economically feasible without, say, 100 units?
Mm-hmm.
Can we defend our position by keeping the chains out, by keeping the number small?
The answer to that is yes. If you can provide a little more justification for the number.
Uh-huh.
Okay, and so what we have right now, and you have some of the pieces of this, okay? Your general plan talks about small businesses. It kind of sets a tone, and then you try to pick that tone up in the zoning ordinance by limiting the number of units. You know, we'll talk about lodging here. And so the first thing that it's going to be asked about your 30 units is, you know, is that supported by your general plan? So we have to decide if we feel like the general plan supports that. I think that the answer is maybe. Then people are going to ask, is it equitable? If you allowed a guest ranch to have 60 units and a motel to only have 30, that probably wouldn't be equitable. If you allowed an RV park to have 60 spaces and a motel to only have 30 units, that probably wouldn't be equitable. So, you know, one of the attacks on a scale type limitation is whether it's applied fairly across the community, right? Okay, so you have to decide in your own mind what's fair, which basically just means you treat everybody who's in approximately the same circumstances the same way, right?
Yeah.
And again, so that's consistency in how you regulate. You have to say, well, it's defended in our general plan, and the general plan says some good things about small businesses. And then the third thing you would want to do, if you could, and the plan doesn't do this directly, is you'd want to tie that scale limitation to your infrastructure, to how much water can be provided, to the ability of the local fire department to deal with large buildings. That's an important one. You know, you guys, as far as I know, don't have a big aerial truck. And so to attack a fire in a really large or really tall building, you don't have the resources, and it's a long ways to the next place that does. And so you want to tie it, and you probably need to say this in the general plan to some degree, you want to tie that scale limitation to the infrastructure that you have available. You can also tie it to the character of the community, to the amount of traffic that's generated. Those things are a little more vague, though. And so the best possible thing is to tie it to infrastructure if you can.
What about lack of a sewer system?
Lack of a sewer system? Lack of a sewer system is a somewhat treacherous one to use if that's all you've got. Because if I'm willing to spend enough money, I can treat a lot of sewage in a pretty small space, right? And so what we would probably, and that gets us back to one of the standards that we've already put in about home businesses, the MPDES permits. We probably want to keep that anti-nuisance standard for larger businesses as well as for home businesses, because that would pretty much preclude me from building my own packaged sewage treatment plant for a large use. And so, you know, you have a bunch of different angles here from which you want to address the question of the scale of a use, and that's one of them. The important thing is that to get back into the language about commercial development in the plan and make sure that that language is consistent with the infrastructure limitations that you have. I mean, we've got road limitations, we've got firefighting limitations, we've got no sewer system. I don't know what the water limitations are, but there may be some of those. So you can also say, hey, we don't have, you know, there's no very large law enforcement presence in Boulder. That could be one of the things when it comes to having a lot of guests in one place.
Wow.
I mean, to me, to be honest, 30 units sounds like a lot in Boulder to me. But given the infrastructure that you have to address it. But part of that also depends on how the 30 units are implemented, you know. So
I'd like to ask a question. I think you said at our last meeting that, and I may have this wrong, that if you allow 30 units for a motel, you would have to probably allow 30 units for an RV park. Did I get that wrong?
No, you got that right. It was back to what I was saying about you have to treat people equitably, right?
Yeah, but if they're not the same thing.
Sort of they are.
But
the question is, do they bring the same number of people into Boulder?
Yeah.
But as far as egress and, I mean, going in and out of a parking area onto, say, Highway 12, having a great big RV pulling out as opposed to just a regular sedan that pulls out from a motel seems like quite a difference.
Well, it is quite a difference, and, you know, that would get us back to having some standards, some ingress and egress, access management standards. You might have to say to the RV park person that they have to make some improvements to Highway 12. And get with UDOT and work on that, and that might well make it very difficult for them to proceed. But there's also, you know, and so yeah, there's the specific ways in which these things operate, in which there are some differences. But when you talk about things like law enforcement, fire protection, emergency medical services, we're concerned primarily with just the overall number of people who show up. And if I have a heart attack in my RV versus a heart attack in my motel room, there probably isn't a whole lot of difference.
Yeah, I can see that.
Right, yeah. So there are some pieces of it that, yeah, there's practical, real differences. There's others where, in terms of the overall demand on the town's ability to provide services and keep people safe, you get beyond so many people and you guys are really strapped. I think that it's wise to think about the scale of things, but you have to have this be obviously visibly fair to everybody. And so I, even though I know that it's clear that there are some differences in operation from a practical point of view between an RV park and a motel, there are also a lot of ways in which they aren't that different. And I wouldn't want to try to defend saying that you can have 40 RV units and 30 motel units. I think that would be really uncomfortable to be cross-examined about that.
I can see the logic in that. So we really have to go back to the general plan and really make sure that, so we're just talking about, like, if someone comes in and wants a 30-unit motel, that might not be much of an impact, but maybe if there's another one and an RV park, then it, and like they're all 30, you've got 90 extra things to deal with.
Right.
And
now, there's a cumulative impact thing. And, you know, the way that you would deal that with that in a larger community, particularly in a larger community that was growing more rapidly, is that you would charge impact fees, right? And the users, the new motel would pay an impact fee, and so, and that would be repeated over and over again, right? Like, in Grand County and Moab, a new motel pays a certain amount of money for stormwater drainage, a certain amount of money for fire protection, a certain amount of money for roads, okay? And that adds up, right? As the development accumulates, then they get more money, and they get enough to actually build improvements with. Boulder is just too small to play that game, okay? You don't have the same starting place. And it's even in a larger community, unless the growth is pretty fast, that's a hard game to play, right?
Impact works come with a lot of baggage.
Yeah, they do, but they also come with a lot of results. I mean, I took a tour a few years after I wrote the impact piece in Grand County, the road foreman, and I went on a tour just to see what they had built with them. And you know, they were growing very rapidly, as you know. There was a time period when Moab, it still is, changed incredibly fast. And they built hundreds of thousands of dollars worth of particularly drainage, road-related drainage improvements that they could not have built any other way without those impact fees. And, you know, I was there for the part of the baggage, and the answer to the question, and I had meeting after meeting with people, with individuals and small groups, talking about those fees. The answer to the question in the end was, do you want the old-timers who lived here in Moab and have lived here for a long time to pay for this through taxes, or do you want the developers to pay part of it? And when you put it in those simple terms, it was pretty easy to get people to go to the county council and say, hey, we think the developers ought to pay a fair share. And Utah has statutes that define what a fair share is, that, you know, the development industry has been willing to live with so far. But you can't play the Moab game in Boulder. It's not big enough. It's not growing rapidly enough to have that help you. So you're not going to get a new addition to the fire station or a new fire truck out of impact fees, even if you do get 3 or 4 30-unit motels. You're going to have to decide when the stopping point is.
I don't think we want the impact for me.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a whole bunch of impacts that you don't want. And so we got to put something in the general plan about cumulative impacts and infrastructure here, and then tie that to some standards here. But I think this is a good conversation. I'm hearing the things that you guys are thinking about. So let me switch gears, okay? Because then I can get one more part of what we need to talk about written up for you. Let's switch gears away from impacts and infrastructure for a while, and let's talk about the visual character of development. Do you guys want to have landscaping standards? Do you want to have standards, I mean, you've got sign standards already, so that's something about appearances. Do you want to require people to do some landscaping, which might have to be xeriscaping, where they don't have access to irrigation water? So that's one layer of questions. Do you want to require some landscaping for new commercial? And then, you know, I know that I've been told by various people that people in Boulder are not going to be open to having architectural standards, and if you're not, that's fine. But do you have any, setting aside the architecture, like what's the siding or what's the color, set all that aside, what about just the bulk of buildings? Do you want to say that we break up long walls? Do you want to say the buildings should be visually absorbed by the landscape instead of being too tall? You've got something like that in your hilltop thing right now, right? That's already there in part of your ordinance. It would just be taking the same logic to some other locations.
There's a height limit.
Right, right. So I guess I'm just trying, and you know, this does not have to be specific. I'm trying to figure out what I can give you in the way of draft standards that you will want to see. And so, you know, the overall appearance, not the specific architectural details, but the overall appearance, the bulk and scale of buildings, you want to see something about that. And then landscaping, do you want to see something about that?
I think it would be really advantageous, Lee, to see what the alternatives are in terms of like detached forms as opposed to a 30-unit, two-story, one lot, you know, like a barracks kind of a building,
right.
15 units below, 15 above, and just boom, rather detached form, because right now that is presumably what they could do. But I think what you're leading us to is saying we could require it be on a larger parcel, and then there would be detached forms, more like the Boulder Mountain Lodge,
right,
which allows planting and it allows a more pleasant dispersive atmosphere.
Yeah. And if that's the way I read it right now, I could do my 30-unit motel in the form of a building that was 180 feet long and 30 feet high, and then it would be, let's say, roughly 65 feet wide. And as long as I met the setbacks from the property lines, which is to say, as long as I had a big enough parcel of land, I could build a really bulky building like that. And I think, I'm not sure you guys would like that.
No.
Right.
That's a big build. That's not a huge building, but it's a big building.
Yeah.
Yeah. The standard there needs to be kind of carefully drawn so we don't, you know, it doesn't become, people are afraid of the architectural standards or anything that smacks of that.
It's right. You know, I'm not really talking about architecture, although we can. I'm talking about the bulk and scale of things. What is the biggest building in Boulder?
It's close to right now. Well, it sounds scary.
What's the biggest building in Boulder? The firehouse.
Probably.
Is the fire building?
Or maybe the church.
Community center of the church, maybe.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I mean, those are not big buildings.
What about the lodge building?
There's that indoor horse arena.
Well, the horse arena. Right, right. Yeah, that's probably huge. That's got to be the biggest building in Boulder.
Yeah.
Okay. But it's not right up on the road either. It blends into the... At any rate, what I'm hearing here, I guess, is an openness to talk a little bit about the bulk of buildings, and I will take what Curtis is saying about breaking it up. You know, the traditional form of accommodations in the rural West was always, you know, a main lodge surrounded by cabins. And I think you could defensively say that's the form we want to encourage.
Yeah.
I think, I mean, 150 by 65 by 30, that would stand out, especially if it was at all close to the road. But that's about what a 30-unit motel would be. with relatively nice units, relatively nice sized units. It could be a teeny bit smaller than that.
Especially if everyone had their lights on at night and their, you know, their drapes pulled back. I mean, it would really light up.
Right.
Yeah. So, right.
Well, yeah, and so light. So we want to talk a little bit about light. We want to talk a little bit about bulk. We won't talk about architecture per se or the type of materials or those things. We'll just talk about the bulk and scale.
Hey, Lee.
These things.
What does the NPDES mean again? I forgot.
That's the National Permit to Discharge Elimination System, which is a term that goes all the way back to 1970 or 72 in the Clean Water Act, and it's the permit that you have to dump anything into the waters of the United States.
Okay.
And in Utah, that's administered by the state of Utah. And so if I want to do, you know, let's take the obvious example. I'm going to do a factory that has the processes waste and therefore discharges waste. I can't just discharge that waste out into the water of the nearby river. I have to go get a permit under this system and meet the requirements for that permit.
Okay.
And I can't see any reason for you guys to even consider uses that need a water quality or an air quality permit in Boulder.
Yeah. I was wondering about one other type of commercial use, and that'd be like a Family Dollar wants to come to town.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you can't really break them up into little buildings. What would be a possible...
Of course, they're much smaller. I mean, the typical Family Dollar in the rural areas around here is probably about between 6,000 and 8,000 square feet. So it's much smaller than that 30-unit motel. And I think that's where you get to... for one thing, if you don't want Family Dollar to show up...
Yeah.
You just put in some landscaping standards, and they will normally not show up.
Okay, that's really my question is, what kind of standards can we put in place that would strongly dissuade a big box of any nature, right?
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, if you make them do good landscaping, then I think you're a long ways in the right direction. If you make them put it up to the street, if you can manipulate the way it sits on the lot, and they won't like that. There are quite a few things that are perfectly defensible you can do that those types of uses will, their investors will just say, no, we're not gonna deal with that. I mean, the sign thing will also, I haven't looked at your sign regulations in detail. They seem to be somewhat stringent, which is good. A lot of times the franchises are really insistent on their signs. In one of my jobs, I had a conversation with Chuck E. Cheese. You guys have all seen it, a Chuck E. Cheese restaurant. And they wanted to come to the town that I was working for, and we had a rule that there could be no internally illuminated signs. And their mouse that they put on the building is internally illuminated. And so I had, and they were, the people I was talking to were in Dallas, and I'm in Vermont, right? And they're like, well, you mean we can't put our mouse on the building? And no, you can put a mouse on the building. You can have all the mice you want, actually, within some reasonable space, but they can't be internally illuminated. And they eventually said, we're taking our mouse and going home. And the community that I was working for there, like Boulder, was pretty concerned about the appearance and quality of things, and, you know, there was no static about that. You know, it was fine. Let them take their mouse and go play somewhere else. So if you regulate signs reasonably, which I think you have a really good start with, if you require some landscaping, if you Make sure that the view from the road is not all parking, which is a combination of how you put the building on the lot and the landscaping. And if you limit the bulk, then there's a bunch of those things that just aren't going to show up. They could, obviously, you could do retail merchandising in a whole bunch of different types of buildings if you want to, but they're just not going to. I mean, we're not in a position, there are some communities that would probably say, well, let's just do it architecturally and limit steel buildings. I don't think that makes any sense in Boulder. You've got too many agricultural rural uses for steel buildings make sense. So I wouldn't recommend that you go that route. I would say that you deal with it with parking signs and landscaping.
Okay.
But we can make it hard for them.
Okay.
Yeah. That's great. Yeah, really. Get rid of that sea of asphalt.
Well, that's you know, a lot of retail businesses have become a little more sophisticated in recent years, but a lot haven't. And if you're looking at Family Dollar or those types of stores, they're going to want a sea of asphalt right in front of the building. That's their thing. And if you say, no, that's not how we want you to do it in Boulder, then they're not going to show up. Okay.
Okay, thanks.
Yep.
Well, I feel like I have a lot to work on. Are there any other questions that you guys want to bring up at this point in time before we set a next meeting date?
I feel a lot better about going forward with CUPs having this great little checklist to keep me honest anyway, because I tend to, it's hard not to become emotionally attached to some ideas that probably are not legal.
Well,
some way.
Yeah.
And so it's good, this really helps just solidify it and gives us a track record for why we did come to the conclusions we've come to. So I
appreciate when I went to work for a really rapidly growing town, and they had a lot of crazy regulations that people didn't like and didn't understand, and you know, I had one of the developers in my office, like the second day I was there, and explaining to me how it had taken 3+ years for him to get partway through the permit process, and it was a real mess. And the mess came because people couldn't stay focused. You would get to a public hearing, and somebody would talk about how their, in Vermont, great-great-great-great-great-grandfather had settled there, you know, in 1744. And all these stories, and as you say, things get emotional. Once we had the checklists, all of it, and then the Planning Commission there, they would go till 1:30 in the morning sometimes when I first got there, which I found very difficult. And by the time we were done switching to a system like this, it's a lot more complicated. It has to be. They have a lot of major industrial uses. But, you know, we were down to Planning Commission meetings that took 2 hours or less, and even the most complicated project that people brought in took a year. So there's a certain magic in just having this type of organization to your conversation. Okay. Do you guys want to meet again in 2 weeks, or what's your...
2 weeks would be the 2nd of June.
Let me throw this out just as a question than anything. We've been promised in June, and I hope that means early June, that we would see the work of this this more of this work group.
Mm-hmm.
Peter Benson's a part of, and I feel like we're doing some really great stuff here, getting some really good things out on the table and everything, but missing two of our PC members, it would be really nice if we could get them on board here sooner than later and participating in this conversation. Pete, can you give us some input on that, or what's going to happen here?
Well, we're going to meet next Thursday, and we're going to try and get, you know, do some review and come up with a document in the next, you know, for the next planning meeting, I think, next planning meeting. So that's the goal here, is to get, you know, to get something that will be, you know, readable and kind of coherent by the next planning meeting. And I'm a little disappointed that neither Josie nor Matt are here tonight.
Josie said she was driving back from Cedar and probably wouldn't be able to make it. I thought Matt was going to be on.
Yeah, Matt said he would be on, but I don't know.
Yeah, Matt promised me that he would be. I talked to him quite a bit about it, but then a couple of days ago he said he had a conflict, so he didn't. But we gotta bring this thing together. We're covering some great ground here, but, you know, we don't want to see the apple cart get tipped over here.
There's not a ton of overlap, and I think the way I've been talking about it is like, well, what we need to do with that group is basically come up with a, you know, bullet points for standards for the things that need to be modified, and have clear, like, either clear choices for each of the bullet points for, like, numbers and things like that. So I hope we can kind of get it organized in that way so that it's kind of fits into this process a little better, and also it'll be usable to generate ordinances and to be usable later on, you know, in the
Well, should we just keep marching apace here then, and they'll show up when they show up, or what?
Yeah, I think okay. A lot of this, there's not a ton of overlap. I mean, the home occupations thing was a lot of overlap, but I think we've kind of come up with the same, we're all going the same direction.
Okay.
What's happening here has been a little more clear. I've been trying to push them to go just make bullet points and try and just
come. Well, it's all going to come together eventually anyway. I mean,
yeah.
In June, you know, that situation that they're in right now will probably end, and it'll start melding together, don't you think? Just
Yeah. It's been, you know, it's been
kind
of mulling things over and making lists and things.
Right.
I think we've been kind of taking those lists and then, you know, breaking them down into the actual points. And it's actually going, the last meeting went better than the previous ones. So I'm optimistic.
Well, you guys have a lot of information, a lot to go through.
Well, Lee, do you want to just stay on a 2-week schedule then and say the next
one? I would like us to keep running 2 weeks because right at the moment I feel like we really have momentum.
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah, I agree.
And that if we go every 2 weeks, we're going to get through. We're going to get through the big questions pretty quickly at the rate we're going. And that's good. Nobody's going to forget. There's not going to have to be a whole lot of bringing people up to speed in the process, because we'll get it done here. So I would say, you know, I a little bit shocked to realize that in 2 weeks is June, but okay. Let's do it on the 2nd of June, and I will get some stuff out to you guys.
Okay.
I want to say that every meeting I learn something of value, and it gives me a lot to think about. And as I drive around Boulder, I look at things now in a different way. And I also really appreciate the memos that you send out to Peg, and then she sends them to us, and it's a really good way to kind of keep this in mind and have it be a continuum until our next meeting. Anyway.
Well, you're going to get thank you, and you're going to get another big memo.
Okay. All right, good. I feel the same way, Cookie.
Good.
Yeah, this has been a good, and we have a good core group, so at least those of us who've been doing this have been here through all the meetings, it seems like.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, pretty consistent.
Yeah. Yeah. So, June 2nd, then.
June 2nd.
Okay.
Okay.
See you all then.
Thank you.
Thanks, everybody. Thanks, Lee.
Yeah.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you. And we'll close the meeting.
Okay.
Thanks. Thanks, Peg.
Yep.
Thanks.
Bye.
See ya. Bye. Bye.